Hello and welcome to the 19th episode of Mobile Podcast. Mobile Podcast gives you exclusive insights into the major public interest issues affecting the mobile telecommunications industry. I'm your host, Simon Clark, and in this edition we'll speak with Dr. Joe Morrissey, a visiting assistant professor of pharmaceutical sciences with the Nova Southeastern University in Florida, about a recent workshop he hosted on the thermal aspects of radio frequency exposure. The US Food and Drug Administration, the Mobile Manufacturers Forum, and the GSM Association co-hosted the January workshop, which was held in Maryland in the United States. I spoke earlier with Dr. Morrissey about the workshop by telephone from his office in Florida.
Dr. Morrissey, welcome to our program.
Well, thank you, Simon. Thanks for having me.
If we could, let's start with the aim of this recent conference. What was it intended to address?
Sure. As many of the listeners know, there are currently two limit-setting organizations that develop limits for radio frequency exposure to humans from various sources. The first of these is the IEEE, or the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers, and through one of its many subcommittees, it's called ISIS, the International Committee for Electromagnetic Safety, they've developed limits as a standard, and it's called, released as the IEEE C95.1. And that contains limits for radio frequency exposure. There's another group called the International Commission for Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection. The acronym that people throw around is ICNIRP. And they have also come up with limits, and they've published these. The last one was in 1998. They published in Health Physics. And these limits for radio frequency exposure are currently based upon adverse thermal endpoints. Now, there are some exceptions to the temperature basis. Signals 5 to 10 megahertz or below can cause membrane depolarization and nerve stimulation of certain signals. And certain high peak pulse signals can also cause membrane disruption. But by and large, for mobile phones, radios, most of the wireless communication type signals that we are exposed to, the only accepted mechanism of interaction is thermal. And that's what these limits are based upon. ICNIRP has based their localized limits on cataract formation. And the IEEE, without going into too much detail, originally had an engineering rationale, but has since harmonized this with ICNIRP, based on a more biological rationale. And in summary, the localized exposure limits, if you're a worker, would be 10 watts per kilogram. That's a rate of energy deposition. And if you're just a part of the general public using a mobile phone, this localized limit is 2 watts per kilogram. It is averaged over about 10 grams. In answer to your question, the goal was to gather more support for more tissue-specific localized exposure limits based on temperature. I hope that made sense.
It did indeed. Let's look a little more at a specific in this, I guess, and that's the continuing debate between scientists about non-thermal biological effects. Can you explain what these are and why this topic is so controversial?
Sure, sure. And again, that hits at the heart of the issue of the limit and the discussions that we have regarding the limits and many of the discussions at scientific meetings and things. As humans, just mammals in general, from mice to elephants, we spend a lot of metabolic and behavioral energy to maintain our temperature at about 37 degrees. This keeps our cells kind of in this balance between facilitating appropriate metabolic processes, but not overwhelming our damage repair. Now, when temperature rises above about 3 or 4 degrees above core temperature, then we start to incur some tissue and cellular damage. And there's a very well-established time-temperature relationship between hyperthermia and cell damage. As long as temperature is maintained below these levels, we're very good at not only dissipating heat, but our body can, you know, cells have the mechanisms to deal with that, an added thermal load. So to your question, if the only relevant mechanism is thermal, first there's a much more it's much more tangible endpoint. You know, there's a wide hyperthermia literature that we can get a very good idea what the danger levels are. But also we're literally born to deal with heat dissipation. I mean, as children on up to adults, we have a very robust thermoregulatory response. And if the only mechanism, relevant mechanism of RF interaction with biological tissue is temperature, we're very good at dealing with that and mounting a thermoregulatory response to dissipate excess heat. Now, if there are non-thermal interactions, well, that is a completely different animal. You know, what are these mechanisms, and what are the thresholds? There may be cumulative effects that can occur with long-term use of an RF transmitting product like a mobile phone. Do these mechanisms synergize with other environmental exposures? It's unknown. In general, from a limits setting activity, one would have to be much more precautionary in terms of exposure if there were robust evidence that a non-thermal mechanism exists. To date, many people have looked at these theoretical mechanisms, and there's been several reviews and differing opinions. The bottom line is that if such alternate mechanisms do exist, the amount of energy required to drive them would be so great that we would probably cook first. So the standards groups have taken the position that the only currently validated mechanism of radio frequency exposure, radio frequency interaction with biological tissue is thermal. And based upon that, the limits have been set to ensure that there is no damage from increases in temperature.
Okay, so we understand that exposure to radio frequency signals emitted or used by mobile phones could increase body temperature. Is this dangerous to health or potentially dangerous?
No. If you put a phone to your ear, sometimes you do feel that it feels warm. Most of this is the circuitry, you know, the battery, just the fact that you have a surface on your ear that doesn't allow convective and conductive heat loss. The amount of energy that penetrates, especially to deeper tissues such as the brain, is very small.
Well, if we can get back for a moment to the specifics of the workshop, what implications are there for the international safety standards from the discussions that occurred at that workshop?
Sure. Well, you know, my hope is that both of the limit setting organizations begin to move more towards tissue-specific localized limits. Technology evolves very rapidly, and the standards need to not be centered on one type of technology, but look at potential radio frequency exposure across the body. So that, I think that is the hope for what I'd like to see the outcome from this workshop contribute to international standards, is that it drives them more towards tissue-specific localized limits that are more robust. The current rationale based on certain cataract studies and engineering dosimetry could use to evolve as the literature on time temperature limits evolves.
There have been allegations, of course, that safety standards aren't strict enough, and there are some people who say the standards don't take into account scientific reports that show thermal effects well below heating levels. What should we make of this?
We certainly need to follow this area of research, but we are very good at dissipating heat. We also commonly experience transient temperature excursions of a degree or two or more. When we bicycle, when we run around the block, different cycles, drugs, disease states. So we've all experienced fevers, and we've come through the other side unscathed, hopefully. The current science, from a comprehensive survey of the literature, suggests that the current limits are very conservative. We can tolerate, especially the organs such as the skin that are often highly exposed to many of these external sources. We can tolerate levels of heating orders of magnitude above what the current limits are placed. The safety margins associated with these limits ensure that we're not going to experience any significant adverse levels of heating. I think that concern that the standards are not strict enough, it's not really based upon a well-founded review of the literature. I think a lot of special interest groups and certain individuals, there is a kind of a thought process or a position that these standards are make people vulnerable to radio frequency exposure, that I think just isn't true. I think the standards are right now very conservative, and if anything, additional focus in making them more robust will show that the actual limits, the thresholds for adverse effects are far greater than what the limits currently suggest.
So finally, Dr. Morrissey, what would you say were the overall conclusions drawn from this recent workshop?
Sure. Well, from a whole body perspective, if we're being exposed in the sort of far field from sources that are somewhat far away, I think the rationale is fairly well established, and the group did seem to agree that the animal behavior studies were a good sound rationale for whole body limits. I certainly think there's room to refine the tissue specific time temperature rationale for localized limits. I think one surprising thing from the workshop was that children, we certainly need to view children with special interest, and this has been an issue of concern in the radio frequency community, bioelectromagnetics community. Children need to be viewed with special interest, but all indications were that they were also surprisingly adept at dissipating heat as well. We had some exercise physiologists there. And others, and they showed that the children, given as long as they're adequately hydrated and rested and having pretty good fitness level, can dissipate heat on par with 20 or 30 year old adults, given the same intensity of exercise. Even younger children, 3 or 4 years old, certain modeling studies and laboratory studies were presented that show these children also can dissipate heat remarkably well. So I think the conclusions from the workshop were that most of the tissues in our body can tolerate heating levels of a couple degrees or more, and the current limits are far below anything that would generate that kind of heating. So I think the current limits are very conservative. And while perhaps there's no real drive to change the limits, I think the rationale for those limits, limits for the brain, the skin, the testes, the eye, I think we could go into much greater detail in coming revisions of the standard to develop a much keener rationale, more robust rationale.
Dr. Morrissey, thank you very much for joining us on our program today.
All right, thank you, Simon. I appreciate that. Any time.
Mobile Podcast would like to thank Dr. Morrissey for taking his time to appear on the program. We'd also like to thank you for listening and hope you enjoyed the 19th episode produced in February 2010. Mobile Podcast will be available for download regularly at www.mmfai.org/mobilepodcast or www.gsmworld.com/help. Mobile Podcast is made available for download by the Mobile Manufacturers Forum and the GSM Association. The information contained on this podcast is provided for general information purposes only and does not purport to offer legal, health, or any other professional advice. Where reference is made to a company or a specific commercial product or service, howsoever referred, no endorsement or recommendation is implied or intended. The views expressed are those of the speaker alone and do not necessarily represent those of the Mobile Manufacturers Forum or the GSM Association. All guests have volunteered their time to help promote an open discussion of the issues addressed.